From Inner Systems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
System VP of Innovation and Research at Endeavor Health. For those who don't know, Endeavor Health, formerly known as North Shore Edward Elmhurst Health, is a health system based in Evanston, Illinois, just outside of Chicago, with 2,000 hospital beds in 9 hospitals served by about 10,000 primary and secondary providers. Justin, thanks so much for joining us on Healthy Data Podcast.
Thanks, Jordan. Great to be here.
So you're the SVP of Innovation and Research. Many of our listening audience are also SVPs of Innovation at their own institutions. I know you've been doing a bunch with digital pathology, AI, some early wins in genomics. I'd love for you to just kick off our conversation with an overview of some of the broader projects that you've been working on in the innovation space. What have been some outcomes and some early wins, and we'll dive in from there.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. So, you know, as a community-based hospital, you know, we exist in a very unique setting, I think. And I bring that up to say that, you know, in a lot of academic organizations, they're really focused on kind of bringing ideas from bench to bedside through their own research verticals, right? I think what's very unique about Endeavor is we kind of have this idea that we're not the experts everywhere. We want to learn from people that are doing things in the industry. That's why these podcasts are very important. It's great to learn and hear from others what their some of their pain points and priorities are. But I think really, as I consider innovation in our community hospital setting, it's solving for the last mile, the last quarter mile, and honestly, like the last 3 feet. And so as we've been looking at our innovation agenda for this last year, a lot of things are like, just how do you actually get it into scale? How do you get out of this whole, you know, pilotitis type thing? And you actually have the ability to get something to scale. And so our team has had some really incredible wins this year. We went live with a bridge, which is our ambient solution that we're using right now. And you want to talk about impact. We went from having a pilot that was intended to go for, you know, 6 months or something like that. 3 months into the pilot, we said we have to scale this. Just the outcomes from our providers in terms of the way that they were talking about this relative to their own work-life balance, actually getting out of the pajama time, you know, cycles that they're all in. And interestingly, we went from having, you know, our first group of 50, we're now at 500. And I don't know if I've ever seen a technology necessarily that has had that quick of uptake, and it's actually staying power. We're seeing our clinicians using this 80, 90% of the time for their notes. And so really excited to be able to bring that technology forward. One of the byproducts of that actually has been that we're actually seeing even increases in our RVU productivity. Most recently, we did a review, and based on our pilot providers before and after, we're actually seeing almost a 14% gain in their productivity from using this technology. So huge win for us on that one.
I've heard a lot about ambient listening technology. I think there's a few different flavors out there. How is it? I think that's been something that addresses a variety of things. After COVID, you had a lot of provider retention issues. I think now that you have LLMs, large language models, there's more capacity to kind of help with provider documentation. I've also heard that it helps with provider notes. And then there's talk in the future about integrating discrete data elements directly into the EHR. Is that something that you've seen on the roadmap?
Yeah, so actually we are integrating this discreetly into the note right now. What we haven't done yet, and it is on a future roadmap, is actually make it so that when the provider is having the conversation, it can actually tee up those orders and even begin to kind of pen those for them to just simply sign off on. I think that's going to be a really interesting space, because now you're able to actually move into a world where you really don't even need the keyboard in the office. So I do see that being a huge area of opportunity. The other thing is, what's next best? I think there's more technology coming out that's actually intending to, in real time, almost provide the whisper into the physician's ear of, hey, based off of what you're talking about, it looks like this may be blank ABC condition. Maybe ask a few more probing questions around this. And I think that's going to really demonstrate how you're bringing clinical decision support into the real-time conversation. So really excited to see what that does in terms of trying to, you know, help providers diagnose more accurately. But also, as I think about it, it's on my research hat, it's the ability to say, how do you take that real-time conversation that's happening and identify that the patient might actually be eligible for a clinical trial? And now that you have these large language models that are able to understand all the criteria, inclusion, exclusion criteria, you then have the ability to whisper to the physician, hey, this trial may be something that's of value to that patient. That's something that you wouldn't have been able to do before. And I think because of how these technologies are saving time for our physicians, I think it actually presents that opportunity to fill in the appointment with something that could be more value added, like enrolling in a research study or a clinical trial.
So you mentioned something just now. You said, what if there was, and this is a future potential capability of something like a bridge or ambient listening AI, what if the LLM in real time could go through the patient's EHR and see if that patient would be eligible for clinical trials in real time while the provider is standing there? But you also mentioned the value of podcasts and having everybody else, peers around the country, interacting with each other. So my question is, as FHIR is a standard, NHL7 is a standard for sharing in different health systems around the country, what I like to ask is, what if that patient is eligible for a clinical trial at a different healthcare delivery system? Is there any discussion about populating a FHIR to OMOP pipeline, about standardizing data formats, about not just seeing if this patient is eligible for a clinical trial and enrolling and engaging in research, but perhaps 1,000 miles away, a listener to this very podcast says, hey, at my institution, there's a clinical trial. How about in real time, the patient get information, the provider get information about his eligibility?
You know, at the end of the day, we want to have trials that meet the patients where they are, right? We want them to be available, because part of the issue that you have with clinical trials, honestly, is that if they're not available in the patient's backyard, they're not going to have access to it. And a lot of these require follow-up visits and things like that. But to your point about, you know, patients should be able to access clinical trials regardless of if it's in our organization or not. I mean, at the end of the day, there are not going to be enough individuals in our organization to make, you know, every trial available. It doesn't make any sense for us to do that. So the question becomes, I think, an important one is, how do you allow that data portability so that that patient, if they are actually going to do that, they have the ability to take their data with you? And to your point around FHIR and OMOP, I agree with you. That is definitely a way that we need to begin thinking about that. I mean, a lot of this is going to be predicated on where, you know, the large EMR vendors ultimately position these types of programs. But, you know, for me, there's no benefit in us preventing a patient from being able to access what could be a life-saving drug. And so whatever we can do to help facilitate it, we need to do it.
So we're on the topic of AI. I'd like to pivot for a minute. I believe you said that you're setting up your own Gemini tenant. Would you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so really exciting. We're working on setting up our own internal kind of large language model that's going to be focused on initially operational issues and processes and things like that. So we've had a lot of use cases brought forward from our HR team about how do you create, you know, memos and all these different things based on all our policies, or even our staff being able to query and say, hey, I've had an employee who has been absent 3 or 4 times, this, what could be potential next steps that I would explore, and have it actually surface those resources so they're not trying to find it within a, you know, a busy website or an internal intranet. That I think is going to be a very, very early use case, because it doesn't include PHI and it's really focused on just surfacing and summarizing policies. And, you know, if you want to put it into a poem, go for it. But I think the next generation of this really is going to get into the business insights, and then ultimately how are you pulling this all together so you're actually seeing the entirety of the clinical picture, and physicians will have the ability to ask those big questions. So right now, like I said, we're in the early stages. I actually am getting my login later this week, so I'll be able to actually start playing around with the tech. But it'll be I think it'll be helpful for us to be able to play with this and start getting it in the hands of others so they can understand and help us design those next use cases. But really excited to have that up and running as a demo right now. And our hope is that we'll be able to scale it into the clinical space towards the end of this year or early next.
It's fascinating. We started this conversation by saying, how do we go the last 3 feet? When we have a successful pilot, how do we scale? I think a lot of listeners to this show are listening, are wondering right now, yeah, we have a bunch of interest in AI. We have lots of different experiments and pilots going on. How do we kind of accelerate that and move our own AI model training on our own data, move it into production quickly and not get bogged down in committees? And I think starting with non-clinical data without PHI is a good way to just kind of get running before, as processes, IRB or whatever is viewing in the background. Also on AI, I think that another kind of early win, I think you're working on digital pathology. Would you mind sharing with our listeners what you're doing there?
Yeah, we just announced last week a partnership that we've established with Google and a variety of other vendors. It is really setting a new standard for DICOM and imaging for metadata surrounding digital pathology. And so for me, this is, I mean, if you think about radiology, can you imagine a world where you're still walking around with films? It's just unbelievable that we do that in pathology, though, and we do it with these little pieces of glass and, you know, with tissue on it. And so through a lot of leadership and a gentleman named Dr. John Groth, who is our lead of digital pathology here, we've actually created this first in the world, HL7 compliant, all these different things. Standard that we hope that will enable us to begin offering this service not only to our existing providers, but hopefully extend it beyond so that we can, you know, essentially reduce the amount of waste that we have in our system and duplication of services because we don't have the ability to offer pathology services at all of our locations. So I'm actually very, very excited. This is a big investment, to be clear. The ROI on this is probably 10 years. And so being able to have the support of the organization to take this bigger leap is incredible. But now you're starting to see the benefit. I mean, if you take a look, there's studies left and right showing how AI performs in radiology and how it performs even better at certain types of imaging. And I think we're going to get to that point in pathology very quickly. And so we've already done a couple test cases using prostate AI, or an AI that's focused on prostate cancer and identification of what would be maybe a lower grade prostate cancer versus higher grade. And the tools really do work. And so I'm excited to see how this continues to evolve. And again, like now you're starting to train the data on images in a way that I think is going to be truly groundbreaking for the entire industry. And John is a thought leader also when it comes to how do you use this information to make it more personable for patients. And can you imagine, like, you actually have the ability to do a teleconsult with your pathologist to explain your slides and your diagnosis? Again, you won't be able to do that for every single patient. But if you have a very complex, being able to show those images to a patient, imagine what that does in terms of giving them the confidence in the care that you're providing, but also allows them to ask questions of the expert, the person who actually is making the diagnosis. Oftentimes in pathology and radiology is sitting behind the scenes. They now will have the ability to do that live, and I think we'll usher in a new way that we think about diagnostics in totality.
So you are the VP of innovation, and I think I've heard a few other guests on Healthy Data podcast speak about how there's 1-2% margins in most healthcare delivery systems, and they're looking for new revenue streams, right? And some healthcare delivery systems are thinking about, well, maybe we can start developing our own products and productizing the software and selling it to other organizations. So I know you said big investment, ROI in this digital path could be 10 years, but I wonder if you've thought about internal ROI versus external ROI, selling it to other health systems versus just making it open source. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, actually ARPA has a very unique program right now that they're launching that's around kind of creating a data commons that would actually create a marketplace for data commercialization. And it's in early stages right now, but we are absolutely looking at that because as we're generating all of this data, how do we put it to better use in terms of being able to train these models and ultimately improve those models? So there absolutely is an understanding that that is a dual mandate that we have, is to think about not only what is the impact, because to your point, like this is a 10-year ROI, how can we kind of shorten that ROI by being able to leverage those assets in a responsible way to drive, you know, new discovery and or new curation of these models? So It's on our roadmap. It's definitely conversations that we're having right now. And like I mentioned, ARPA, I think it's called Index, is a program under ARPA, is looking at creating this data commons that would almost allow for a free capital market and setting up pricing on data and things like that, which is, I think, very novel. I've never really had the chance to dive into it a lot, but if you think about it, it's almost like a stock exchange for data. And the market is pricing the data based off of that value of the data in real time. So a lot more to unpack with that, but if folks are interested, check out ARPA's website. It talks a little bit about it.
I think our listeners will be fascinated in that. We've touched upon partnerships with large organizations like Google before in many different episodes. We've talked about commercialization of data. We've talked about AI in general, but we haven't. This is a new one on Healthy Data Podcast, so I think this is fascinating about a means of generating new revenue for other health systems around the country. I think listeners will be interested. I do want to touch upon the topic of genomics. I know that's a topic that is of interest to you. We haven't yet hit it today. So please enlighten our listeners. What's going on at Endeavor Health with genomics?
Yeah. So, genomics is something that is near and dear to me. I've had the privilege of serving as the administrative lead alongside Peter Hulick and Mark Denenberger, who are our clinician directors. And we have done, I think, a significant amount of work to help educate about the value of genomics, but we still have a lot of work to do. I mean, if you think about it, 20% of your health is based off of your genetics. And yet we don't talk about it. And I guarantee you that most of your listeners do not have their genetics done. They have never had a single gene test, let alone pharmacogenomics or whole genome sequencing. And so for our system, we're really trying to think about how do we break down some of the traditional barriers that were established by, honestly, a lot of it was done by our payers, and for good reason. Genetic tests used to cost $10,000 per test, right? Now you can get a genome for $100. And so what our system is really focused on now is trying to figure out what the plan is to bring that to patients at scale. Right now, we've tested about 50,000 patients as part of primary care, which, to be honest with you, is the largest program that's based in clinical genomics in the U.S. as it relates to really offering clinical genomics as part of primary care. But we have 1.4 million patients, and it will take us a very long time unless we add a zero to the number of patients that we're testing every week. And so to me, the opportunity in front of us is how are we beginning to leverage all of the new technologies, agentic AI, to help us with consenting patients, to explain results, to activate patients into the follow-on care? Because the reality is that in genetics, there's a wonderful thing that happens. You're doing the right thing for the patient, and you're doing it earlier, which means there's likely to be less cost associated with it. And honestly, there's better outcomes. If you identify a stage one cancer versus a stage four cancer, the costs are dramatically different and the outcomes are dramatically different as well. And so for us, we're really focusing on moving from a reactive state of disease into something that is more proactive. And really excited, actually, this last year, in partnership with a company called Genomic MD, we actually created the first commercially available clinical grade polygenic risk score. And polygenic risk score is a fascinating area and can provide a little bit more perspective on that if you're interested. But the reality is that all of us have a polygenic risk score for every disease out there, every single disease. Knowing your polygenic risk score ultimately will allow us to be able to triage and take care of patients based off of their own genomics. And if you think about it, I'm actually, my mother is adopted. And being that she's adopted, I don't know that entire side of my family history. But if I have my genetic screening done and I'm getting these polygenic risk scores and all these other things, it's giving me insight to something that I don't see today. And so, I think this is a fascinating area that's going to continue to grow. It was interesting. I was just looking at something. I think it was Deloitte was listing their top innovations. And for the last several years, it's been AI, is number one. Genomics actually went back to number one. And I think that is beginning to show the maturity of genetics, but it's also demonstrating the value because I think, AI has been a little bit hyped, but being able to actually triage and manage patients based off of their genetic risk is the next frontier of medicine.
Well, Justin, it sounds like Endeavor Health is all about the triple aim of improving outcomes, improving value, reducing costs, improving quality. So I'd like to offer you an opportunity to say a parting message to our listeners. We've covered a lot of ground from ambient listening, early wins with Gen AI, talking about standardizing data, making Gen AI patient visits, providing real-time feedback from the EHR using LLMs to the provider at the point of care. We've covered the value of genomics and how to transition from being reactive to proactive in providing care. And we've covered AI with digital path, and even an opportunity potentially to create a stock exchange for data. Any parting thoughts to anybody who is titillated by this laundry list of innovative ideas?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I will say is there is so much opportunity and potential for us to change the way that we deliver care. And, you know, I view health systems as being in a very unique position to make an impact on care delivery, no doubt. But I think we're also in a unique position to start thinking about our role as truly an orchestrator of care and understanding that, you know, I joke around this, I have six kids. So like we go grocery shopping and we shop at Costco, we shop at, you know, Jewel, we shop at Trader Joe's, we go everywhere, right? And in healthcare, we're very hesitant to embrace a world where it's okay for me to get certain services at different locations and through different companies. And I think for health systems, the next iteration of this is how do we create those partnerships that allow for the interoperability of the data so that we're not creating any waste in the system, but we start getting patients where they need to be seen with the right modality. You know, I recently was looking at getting a colonoscopy and looking at how long it takes to get into have a colonoscopy. The reality is, like, with my genetics being, I have a low polygenic risk score for colorectal cancer, I don't have any of the inherited disease factors related to monogenic. Could we actually begin thinking about positioning Justin as an individual and not going down the traditional route of colonoscopy, but instead maybe doing something like multi-cancer early detection testing or FIT testing or Cologuard? And I think that's really the next iteration of this for health systems, is being willing and comfortable to look at what's in the best interest of the patients and understanding all the different partners that we can bring to the table to give them that best outcome.
Well, you did it, Justin. You added yet another topic, personalized medicine based on genomics. I think this has been a fascinating conversation for our listeners. This has been Justin Brick, the System Vice President of Innovation and Research at Endeavor Health. Justin, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate the opportunity.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.